Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Irish Wolves podcast. Well, the plan this week was to talk about Wolves and the roller coaster of the last few weeks between the Cup and League games and how our fortunes have changed. Well, circumstances last Saturday where we had a cancelled last minute goal swiftly followed by a cancelled flight home dictated that our conversation would go in another direction. So sit back and listen. I'm joined by Tony Cullen, Gary Cotter and Mick McQuillan. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Good evening, gentlemen. The four apostles, how are we doing?
Who's in?
Well, it's Gary, Tony, yourself and myself. I gave Johnny a shout hoping he might appear, but I haven't... He said he'd be here, but I haven't heard that back. Well, good evening. How are we? Gary, sunny Spain, yeah?
Sunny Spain.
Yeah, well for some.
You bringing something back with you, Gary?
I might try that. It's fucking... Wouldn't be a bad idea. I'd say I could sell it.
Yeah. You'd have plenty of buyers here anyway. You only went out... You only arrived today, didn't you? This afternoon. So,
yeah, the flight was at 11 o'clock this morning.
Yeah. Ah, sure. But, I suppose, speaking of flights, I was going to start off talking about the matches that we've missed in the last few weeks, but I suppose, while it's still fresh in our mind, it'll be fresh in our minds for a long time, I'd say, it was last Saturday. You probably saw in the email I said about disaster. I wasn't just talking about the match. But like the day itself, we didn't do too badly, I don't think. The usual, up at four, Mick picked me up at 4:45, out to the airport. We met... a few lads. I think it was nice actually. It was the father and son of the Villa. And your man showed us his 25-year-old Paul McGrath T-shirt. I don't think he'd ever worn it anyway. Yeah. But Mick, you met a couple of other lads, did you, as well, in the airport?
Oh yeah, typical. It just, they were Villa supporters, hadn't been over in about 12 years, and just got talking. And of course the one came up there. Do you know a Wolves supporter called Rasha Bennett? he's known everywhere. You know, so I said, yeah, sure, I was over Villa Park last week. So he says, back, we know, he says, the boy's best friend was the woman that brought him back to Mullingar, you know, but anyway, it was a good bit of fun before we had it off anyway, you know.
Yeah, there were a few Coventry supporters there as well, but hadn't seen any all season, and of course, typical after they beat us in the Cup, and the first match, then it was after that, and they were... They were sitting in a group there on the way over to the game against Leeds, but they didn't say anything to us, and we didn't say anything to them either, so probably the best thing to do. But so with the usual foot, well, we were ages on the plane. We got in at a decent time, but geez, we must have been 3/4 of an hour on the plane and 3/4 of an hour flying. So we arrived about 8:15. The usual crack, went down for the... You have to get a lift now in Birmingham from when you arrive up to get the monorail, and of course, the big queue and barriers and everything. So just myself and TC ducked under them, got into the lift and up and the monorail. But we had a usual breakfast in Sunbeam, went to McGee's, had a couple of pints. I nipped down to the lounge then to meet a couple of people. So, yeah, there was no player on there. But I think I was talking to you about that anyway, about the way things are at the moment. With the match itself, I suppose. Did you see the match, Gary?
Yeah, I saw the whole game, yeah. Yeah, start to finish.
Again, a bit like the Villa game, you know, very good in the first half, poor in the second, would you say?
Yeah, what I'd said before the game, I don't know whether you recall, but was that I thought West Ham might have one eye on the Cup game during this, you know, the Europa game. As it turns out, it's tomorrow night. And certainly I thought in the first half they were a bit lackluster, but we made the best of it. Like, we made hay while the sun shone, if you like, because I thought we were terrific. But I did feel a lot of that, you know, goodness was kind of because of West Ham's badness. But I was taken by the formation, the team selection. But it worked perfectly, if you like, with essentially Sir Abby and Aid Nouri having it like a free role. Aid Nouri running at them any chance he got, and it was quite effective. It was quite good. But I thought within 30 seconds of the half time, you know, the second half, whistle, you could see it was a different game almost immediately. That we didn't seem to be up for it, and West Ham had got some bollocking at half time, and they were, you know, they came out a rejuvenated second half. Like that's the way it looked to me.
Yeah, Mick, what were your thoughts on the game overall? We'll talk about the last bit and after we get everyone's thoughts.
The game, I mean, we started quite well. I thought he basically was playing. He's playing nearly everybody in midfield and field, but there was nothing wrong with that. But we got at them early. I don't think they were expecting that sort of a formation. Took them a while to come to terms with it. But pretty good for a good. We're sharp. But in a couple of 2 or 3 minutes of the second half, we started messing on the ball.
Yeah.
And they made a switch. In fairness to Myers, he's no idiot.
Yeah.
And he actually changed them. They put a bit more pressure on our defence. But I thought we played right into their hands, because we started to get, so casual. And Doherty and what do you call him, the other left foot, Totti, you know, were criminal what they're doing.
Yeah.
And once they got the goal, they were flying. But
yeah,
you know, the problem we have at the moment, we're short in numbers.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
players we have,
I think,
are fairly nearly burnt out. Yeah, you know?
I think Gary O'Neill even said it there.
He had to take it. He did, yeah.
With the penalty,
he has to take the players off. And the big worry is that if he pushes them for too much, they'll end up more fellas injured. You know, so that's the way I see it. And unfortunately, but that's the way we are.
Yeah, I think. Even with Cunha, I think his type of game, it's going to take him a couple of games to get back to speed. It was a couple of times he nearly left the ball behind him in the second half when he was running with it, you know. But I think it was Gary O'Neill even said afterwards that, without naming names, but for the penalty, he said like there was too much passing the ball just for the sake of it that led to the penalty and losing. Like, I think Doherty get the ball back to Totti, who was closed down straight away. He didn't get a chance to clear. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for putting the boot through the balls sometimes, you know, between teams now insisting on this short kickouts. And, like, it's almost as if players would be told now, you can't kick a ball more than 20 yards, you know, just booting it away. I don't understand it, but it's costing teams an awful lot of games. But, TC, your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I thought Gary had robbed me notes there for a minute, but I think the first half we were very good. We made plenty of movement, plenty of good passing, and we pretty much controlled the game throughout the whole half. They didn't have hardly any chances in the first half.
Yeah.
And like Mick and Gary said, like, start of the second half, you could get a sense that, as Gary said, they got a rollicking at half time, and they pushed up a good bit more on us. And put pressure on the kickouts and when the fullbacks got the ball, and Doherty and Totti got caught a few times, and we got away with it until we didn't, and I think Doyle, he was great in the first half, and as the second half went on, he kind of faded, and he seems to tire relatively quickly after about 55-60 minutes.
Yeah.
I can't remember when he got taken off. I think he did get taken off, did he? Or?
Yeah. Well, he hasn't been playing that much either, you know. So I suppose.
No, I suppose he didn't play the last couple of games, in fairness. But we put more, we were hitting more pressure on ourselves. And I didn't think it was a penalty when I saw the game, but when I saw the highlights the next day on the Sunday when I eventually got out of bed, I don't know what Kilman was doing with his hand out.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, that's back to the old days, 2 years ago.
It reminded me actually of the one against Liverpool at Anfield a couple of years ago, where the ball was crying. Yeah. It was Kilman again, and he jumped up and he stuck his hand out and the ball hit it. And,
yeah,
you know, I thought straight away, I said, the way the ball bounced off him, I said, yeah, that's definitely a handball, you know, and there was no need. Like, I mean, he was kind of just a few yards inside the box, and the ball was going across.
That was self. You're right, Mick's right. I mean, that was self-inflicted. We were floating around with a ball there between Doherty and Totti, and neither of them really wanted it, and neither of them really wanted to put their laces through it. And I think we lost it then, and I think the penalty came from literally from that mistake, if I recall rightly. So,
but then,
yeah, disappointing. And then it was, you know, after that, it was just didn't seem to be able to get grips with them. I think Antonio just bossed Kilman around the place.
As he does.
I thought we got away with that. The goal that they got first, I think, the push in the back, I think that was...
Yeah.
I could see how it was given, but it wasn't the biggest push in the world.
It was a tomato, I think. You could have made the most of it anyway, so, you know. But, I mean, you have to make these things obvious anyway, you know, to the referee for them to give them, you know. Sorry, Gar.
The television, it is me watching the telly, I probably had the best view, but he trod on his foot. Antonio trod on Semedo's foot, which meant Semedo couldn't lift his foot and he just keeled over. So it was a tap in then. So it was the correct decision.
Yeah.
You know, so, I thought it was a good decision.
Yeah, I suppose we were at the stage then at the end of the game that we were resigned ourselves to defeat. We didn't look likely for the last, God knows, many minutes. We didn't look like we were going to get anything out of the game. But then, of course, came out.
I think the problem for us, I think, at the moment is if Dawson is badly missed at the back.
Yeah.
Now, you said that Antonio bossed Kilman. He was well able to boss the black, but he doesn't get away doing that with Dawson.
No.
And that's a huge loss for us.
Yeah. And of course.
At the back, because the two boys are pretty good, none of them have got that experience knowing to deal with it. Well, they don't get stuck into fellas.
I suppose too, Mick, would have been West Ham, Dawson would know Antonio inside out anyway from playing with him for years, you know, he'd know his type of game. But now just at the very end then, we're just going to talk about VAR again, the equaliser that we thought we had at the end being overturned. I can probably predict what you're going to say, but what Gary, watching it on telly, you probably had more of what was going on than we did, but...
Yeah, probably had more background to it. Like, but initially, you know, the referee's decision was I didn't suspect anything would come out of the VAR, you know, out of the referee gave the goal, and I thought everyone was happy. Yeah. But when he called VAR, I was like, what's it for? Yeah, when it shows, I mean, agreed. The dilemma I think is that yes, the goalkeeper hadn't a hope of stopping the goal.
Yeah.
But the VAR was saying offside and interfering with play, you know, interfering with the goalkeeper's vision.
Yeah.
Like he was offside and he was very close to the goalkeeper. Keeper wouldn't have saved it and probably had a decent view.
Yeah.
He put his hands up when the ball went in the net, like appealing for something. Again, probably hoping for something. But I didn't expect such an uproar from all the pundits. Like BBC Final Score, they went bananas on it, and like everybody went bananas on it. To be honest, so I seem to be the only one that thought that there was some merit to the thing.
Yeah, I thought Fabianski putting the hands up. I thought to me it was kind of, you know, frustration that he was nowhere. He got nowhere near the ball and he didn't move.
That could be a fair interpretation. Like kind of throwing
his hands up as if
he did.
But like, I mean, any pictures? I couldn't watch the highlights. But any pictures I saw, like one was that our lad looked at least a yard in front of Fabianski and probably to the side as well. So I mean, he in no way he obstructed him or got in his way to prevent him getting near the ball. I mean, if it was a straight header from Kilman that went over Fabianski with our player where he was, you'd say, yeah, you know, maybe he did kind of restrict his vision or something. But like, I mean, it was straight into the corner, and you know, like we're there on the ground and you're hearing that, you know, VAR check for offside, and we're saying, sure, it's a corner, you know, what's offside, you know, and then people are saying, and this is just people sitting around watching the game and saying, why is the ref going, if it's offside, it's offside. Why is the ref going over to look at the screen? You know, like, I mean, it's total farce, you know. I mean, like, you make a decision straight away. I mean, the longer it goes on, the more you're saying it's not clear and obvious, you know, which is, like, I'm sick of listening to that phrase at this stage. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's a, you see it, oh, yeah, okay. But, like, to take 4 or 5 minutes, watch it again, and what they're watching still pictures most of the time are slow motion. I just can't understand how they come up with the decision they did. Michael, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, my view, the first thing when the ball went in the back of that, because I had a fairly good view, even though it's at the end of the field.
Yeah.
And there was no way we could get anywhere near that. But the first thing I said, it went up the bar, and then they asked the referee to go. And that's the first thing I said. That's the first time I've ever seen them asking a referee to adjudicate on an offside.
Yeah.
So if you find out later on, they said it was a subjective offside. So yeah. If it was a subjective offside, they didn't need to ask the referee to go over and check it.
Yeah.
Because he already had made the decision on field that it was a goal. The linesman already made the decision on field it was a goal. So these lads looked at this. If they thought it was offside, why didn't they call up offside?
Yeah.
To me, it was an absolute joke.
It was interesting
today, you know, listen to Antonio. And he said it was absolutely shambles.
Yeah.
It should never have been disallowed.
And I mean, there's two words I'm going to say, Mick, and they're probably two of your least favourite words and names. But the only goal I can remember similar, and it probably was even worse that VAR disallowed, was we were in Sheffield having our grub before the Sheffield United game, and United were playing Fulham, and there was a ball played in, and that's Man United, and the other word is Maguire, slid in and missed the ball. Do you remember that? And it was knocked back, and it was put in the net, and everyone was kind of saying, checking for offside, and nobody could understand it. And that was it. I think that was classed as suggestive offside as well, that Maguire, even though he'd missed the ball, but the fact that he'd slid in, they were saying, well, he had an effect. But I mean, even the one on Saturday, like, it had no effect on the keeper. Like, number one, because he couldn't get near it.
Yeah, if it was subjective offside, the decision was, it wasn't a clear and obvious error, but the goal should have stood.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have rules there, I call this and that. If they said it was subjective, well, then it meant it wasn't clear and obvious.
Yeah.
Didn't.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, being offside didn't impact on the goal at all. Like, if he had obstructed the goalkeeper from moving towards the ball, or had obstructed the goalkeeper's vision in some way, then I could see some merit in the decision of it being disallowed. Neither of those things happened, as far as I could see.
But I've seen a couple of games in the last few weeks where a keeper's come out and a centre forward, I think it was one of the Luton games, and the centre forward stood there and blocked the keeper as he jumped, and I think it was Burnley and Luton, and VAR looked at it and said, no, the player didn't. Like, I mean, there was no actual physical contact. There was no line of vision blocked. So
I remember the Luton game. Yeah.
I can't see.
And the fella headed it in.
Yeah. I can't see where on the basis for that, the goal being disallowed. I said to myself, it's like looking through the old laws and saying, if a fella's offside, he's offside. I mean, there was a West Ham player actually running back. You know, a second later, he would have actually wouldn't have been offside. He would have been, you know.
I think that ref, there was an incident with that ref a couple of weeks ago when he was a VAR man in West Ham's game. I think it might have been against Bournemouth.
I read that, yeah.
And he didn't give something to West Ham. And I wonder whether that was in the back of his head. But there's no way that goal should have been disallowed. There's not even, he wasn't interfering with play. He might have been offside. In fact, he was offside. Definitely wasn't interfering or affecting the goalkeeper in any way.
Hopefully we'll get back on track. But anyway, after the game, we were heading back up to McGee's to looking forward to a miserable 4 hours before we were heading to the airport. And myself and Noel got there first. I think Noel went into, we got a couple of pints. We were outside. He says, did you get a text? And I says, no. What you get? And it just came through on my phone then. He said, our flight's cancelled. So it was our 10 past 11 flight was cancelled. So there was a lot of scampering around going on as to what we were going to do. That was when I heard. That was 5 past 5. Mick, where were you when you got the news?
I was just coming by the church. Tony said, I met up with Tony. And Tony said, they had the flights cancelled. I said, it hadn't. But, you know, I said, we'd get over to him again. It's just somewhere we could relax and have a look then and see if there was going to happen with the boats and that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Tony had said, I've been saying at the time that everything was booked up till Monday night.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, so until we get over to where you were, that's when I, you know, it's the best thing is to try and get the train down to Holyhead and get the boat.
Did you know one was cancelled?
Adverse weather conditions which were outside of Ryanair's control. mind you, I remember to the word. And I wouldn't mind, but the 7 o'clock flight, even though it was a couple of hours late from Birmingham to Dublin, took off okay. And the Aer Lingus, the 7:45 flight, which was a couple of hours delayed, took off as well on time. So we've had endless thoughts as to why the flight, probably mainly because he wanted to save money, and if it was 3 or 4 hours delayed, he was going to have to cough up compensation. But it was just that. But I was getting phone calls from lads, Tony, what are we doing? I looked on Aer Lingus had one flight on Sunday, and it was 460 in the afternoon. Ryanair, as they were obliged, were to offer you an alternative flight within 48 hours. And the only flight, when you went onto the Ryanair app, that was available was the 11:10 flight on Monday night, which, funny enough, was 48 hours after our flight that was cancelled, you know. So that's all they were given. And they'd pay for hotel accommodation, but we just wanted to get home. So we decided, we had a look on the app, we had a look at the Northern Rail, 50 quid train and boat. So we decided to ditch McGee's. I went to the Sunbeam to have something to eat because we reckon a 7:50 train. So we reckon we'd need something to eat before our long trek. So we had that. So it had to be done. But the train journey up, it's a long enough old train journey. But just the weather on the way, like we stopped off at Crewe. Jeez, there was rain lashing in from all angles, and the roof was leaking all over the place. So we got to Holyhead at 11:15. The boat was 2:40. So we were just hanging around, chatting away. There was a lot of, we had a good lot of people. There was about 10 or 12 of us. Then, in fairness, it was the closest, outside, we forget about Ryanair, but we got up, it was Irish Ferries at 2:40. We heard that was delayed probably for a couple of hours. It was late leaving Dublin. But they offered us to travel on the Stena ferry, which was 2:15. And I think that hadn't sailed, Mick, was it? Hadn't sailed that afternoon?
They had a ferry each, one in Dublin held back and one in Holyhead. So, when they did that, they offered us that, it was great. It meant you weren't going to be any delays.
Yeah.
And, there was a quite a lot of teams like Leeds and that lads, they all had to change their station to go for the boat. And it's, look, I thought the train journey down was great. It was a lovely, brand new train, comfortable.
Yeah.
And even inside Holyhead now, it's grand and comfortable. And then the fact is that we took off at 2:15, and the thing that amazed me, even though we were going up and fucking down, up and down, she came into Dublin Port nearly bang on time.
Yeah.
And I think it was around 5:30 when she stopped in, which to me was fantastic. As soon as I said, 2 or 3 miles out, all of a sudden the Irish Sea became very mild.
I think we only probably touched about half of the Irish Sea on the way over anyway, Mick, because I felt like we were in the air most of the fucking time.
I hit the deck. I got a seat there and I got in. I thought there was a few boisterous people that far away from me, but I lay down and had a bit of a kip anyway, So
because I
certainly wouldn't have been able to fucking drive. I didn't get some sort of a kip. I'd only 3 hours the night before. So.
Yeah. It was as you say, we got back at, it was around 6, and we went onto the bus. We were hoping to get up to get, because we all had to go back to the airport then, because my lads had cars and everything parked there from the flight the previous morning. So because we had fun, the bus from the ferry port up to Dublin it only took cards, you wouldn't take cash. Then we got the bus from Abbey Street out to the airport.
No,
your man would only take card. The Dublin bus fella on Abbey Street take cash or lead card. So, and he says, this is the Eurozone, I was nearly going to say to him,
Mick was trying to give him €2, £2 and 50p coins.
Hold on, Mick wasn't trying to. And that's what it was. And I had £2.50. In English guy, and you had them to him. And he said to me, He said, well, yours is, we only take you out here. So I just informed him. You know, I said, thanks for the fucking information, boys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was tempted to say to him, you know, when he said, this is Euro, I was going to say, yeah, this is 2024, you know, and you don't take card. But I had my Leap card anyway, I just slapped that on and he took the three fares or whatever off it, you know. But I think he put his hand up afterwards to say, I probably went a little bit over. But
he's being a prick. Fucking really.
Yeah, exactly. that hour the fuck him on. This is something like a business term. Like, we were bad enough. We'd now fucking stay by Little and Ousley. We should be the ones who's grumpy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, you wouldn't know it. He could have had a hard night at home, you know. But,
Good advertisement for Dublin buses.
I wouldn't mind it. And the bus was jammed as well. That hour at 6:30 in the morning. But, so anyway, we go back to the airport and we all got home by, what? Well, Mickey, you dropped me off at 7:45 or whatever and straight to bed. So you got home, what, 9:00, Mick?
No, it was early than that, Tony. I was back. I was in my house now by 8:20.
Oh, really?
We were on that bus. I couldn't believe it. Darcy Street gone right through. I that was 20 days. No, but it was a great. I saw 20 there. Seven. I thought it was fantastic because when I got in the house, it was 8:20. I had a cup of tea and
Because we were at the airport at 7:00, just after 7:00, and we got off and we walked off to the car park, you know. And But it kind of the Sunday was fairly ruined as well. Anyway, you know, to kind of go home, got a few hours kip. I had to go off doing me singing then at 2:30, so we made it. The girl who was playing the organ says to me, "You look tired." I says, "I'm old. I've had a long 2 days, and I just want to finish this and get home." So as I say to you, you know, as I put up a thing on Facebook and the Irish Wolves and all that, saying like, you know, it was a, you know, you wouldn't want to go through that every week, but like great gang with us, you know, great fun. As I say, Jack was going around looking like he'd be dining out on this story for the next 6 years. He was loving it.
Rasher Mark too.
Oh, stop. I'll have to cut that out. anyway, listen, we've only a few minutes left, would you believe? I was going to talk about the matches that gone by, but I suppose with a few minutes, the rest of the season, do we see it kind of filtering out the way it did a couple of years ago, where, you know, we've had a couple of bad results and, you know, we'll just end up finishing in the middle of the table. Gary, you think?
Well, yeah, I think it's, in some ways, I don't think O'Neill will let that happen. The question is, have we got the people who are capable of not letting it happen?
Yeah.
Enough people not to let it happen, I suppose, really. There's some of the games you'd say, God, will we get anything at all? But I think, as he's proven time and time and again, is I think we'll get a decent share of points from, you know, the eight. Is it eight?
The seven
games left now.
Seven left.
Seven is 21. We should be getting half it anyway, shouldn't we? But I mean, I suppose City away, Liverpool away, Arsenal.
And Arsenal, We got those three. Well, you know, chances are we get a point or two off them and lose at home to Luton, you know, the way we normally go. Mick, what's your thoughts on the rest of the season?
I think it depends on maybe three players. If Dawson gets back in there and Koenig gets up to speed, that'll give us something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have someone who could score or could get things going, and you have someone to back will stop it happening. Because some of the goals we're giving away at the moment, but I know with Dawson there, we'd be out blocking the shots.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that at the moment, we're hanging back. And it'll all depend on that. But I go back to what Gary said, it's true. Like, we don't seem to have the players to go in there and replace Dawson.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I thought of January. It was crazy letting the likes of Yerson out on loan. He would have done a great job back there, because he played in the back three. We left ourselves too loose. Nothing Gary could do about that. You know, that's what
you'll see. And I think Bueno has filled in decent enough, like in Dawson's absence, you know. Like, he's been bit parts all season, but like, he's played the last two or three games, full game. Santiago.
I agree with you, Tony, there, but the problem is, himself and Kilman, they don't work well.
None of them have taken responsibility. That takes time, you know. Yeah.
I know.
Tony, what's your thoughts on the rest of the season?
Yeah, I suppose I'm a bit more pessimistic than the lads. I think it's going to peter out a little bit. I think we just don't have, you know, if we don't get these guys back,
yeah,
you know, in all cylinders, we're going to struggle. We're going to struggle. I don't think we'll get much out of the three games against the top three. Perhaps maybe the exception, the Liverpool game at the end of the season, and like Bournemouth at home, Fulham at home, Luton are no mugs either, you know. So
yeah.
I hope I'm wrong because I'm going to quite a few of those games, but I just think we've been left too short. With no, you know, when you're bringing on 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, relying on them.
Yeah, it's like there's a huge gulf there between the first team players and the young lads that are coming in. Like, you know, I mean, they need time to get that kind of.
Yeah,
it seems to be the
pressure on them to perform. It can send them the other way. You know.
Yeah. But I mean, their normal, their staple match is in front of probably a few hundred and for the under 21s, you know, and then they're stepping up to, you know, full stadia all around the country. So yeah, just a quick one then on Saturday, Forest, TC, Mick, you're over, yeah? Three of us over.
No.
Oh, you're not over, Tono. Except Mick are over, so Forest will be all up for it, I think, anyway, will they?
Without, this is a quick question. With the Bilkins we got on Sunday after the final whistle, does it affect any of our players? Gomez is not out, is he, for
it? Which? Yellow cards?
We got three or four Bilkins at the final whistle on Saturday. And I know, Gomez out for the game?
Gomez got one during the game.
Did he?
Yeah. So there would have been a second, I assume he didn't get it. No, he needs. He has one more. If he gets a card against Forest, I think he misses two games. I think is Sunday the cutoff? This weekend is the cut-off point.
So
we'll be hoping he doesn't. But I mean, the one he got on Saturday was ridiculous anyway, you know. I mean, he hardly touched the guy, you know. And when you see Casemiro on Sunday nearly taking the fella's ankle off and he gets a yellow card for it, you know. And I see when the caption comes up, he's five yellow cards. It says to myself, Jesus, is that in the last month or is it all season? Unbelievable. But as I say, Forrest will be firing. Do you think we'll get something out of it, Michael?
I think we can.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I think Dawson might come in on Saturday. I think he might bring him in because he was warming up at that the other day, and I think that could be a huge.
Yeah.
Huge,
he's quite out, is he?
Sorry.
I think he's out because he's injured, isn't he?
His son come off.
Yeah.
Early in the other game on Sunday, and he was holding his calf. So
yes,
he's not fully fit. Whether he
gives
himself
extra,
I don't know.
He was on the one of the Forest players. Was it Gibbs White? But he had ice on his leg. He was sitting on the bench.
It was Gibbs White. Yeah,
Gibbs White. Yeah, Gary, what's your thoughts on Saturday?
I think I'm looking forward to it. It's Nuno against O'Neill. I think Vic's right. I would prefer us to have Dawson in the context of. Chris Wood, who always manages to cause us trouble and cause problems for us. So, yeah, I'd prefer. But I can't write us off in anything. We should have got that point at the end there on Saturday after even such after shit second half.
Yeah.
I think we're definitely capable of, we should be getting a draw anyway. I wouldn't be too gung-ho for a win, but I think we could get a draw out of that.
Yeah, because they're not great at the back anyway, yeah, so... Hopefully we'll settle for a point anyway. So listen, lads, great to chat. I'm sure Mick will see you Saturday. Lads, hopefully we'll see you in the next week or two for the next game.
Enjoy the game, lads.
See you.
Enjoy the game.
I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Join us again next week for some more interesting stories from fans and from former players. Until then, I wish you the best for the next week. And you can follow us on irishwolves.org on our website. Or on Irish Wolves on Facebook. Thanks. See you next week.